Welcome to the DFA Podcast. On today's episode, we talk about Tyler Clifford, Neil Walker, and we reenact the best and worst moments of a D.A.R.E. campaign. It's all here, the DFA Podcast.
Welcome to episode 23 of the DFA Podcast, brought to you by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Brian Grosnick. Joining me, as always, RJ Anderson, co-host, extraordinaire, publisher of interesting articles about agents. RJ, how's it going today?
That's like the worst possible introduction you could have gave me there. I think everyone who was listening just turned it off. They're like, that's the best you can do, is that he publishes interesting articles about agents. Well, gonna go listen to whatever podcast is out there. Anyway, I don't know. They're gonna go listen to old Effectively Wild episodes or whatever now. So,
I mean, that's not the worst idea in general, is to turn off our podcast and listen to one that you find is better. But no, I mean, you post a really interesting article today on CBS Sports about agents, and I know agents aren't always the sexiest of topics, but I think it was well researched and very interesting. So I think everybody should go read it. And that's why I led off with that. And it's not because our topics for today are a little bit not quite as big name as some others we've had in the past, I guess.
Oh, I appreciate that. And yeah, thank you. And, you know, credit to CBS Sports, you know, Sergio Gonzalez and the crew there let me have a lot of fun and leeway in terms of what I pursue, and hopefully people enjoy that. So,
well, let's get on to the good stuff. Air quotes. I'm making air quotes if you can hear it. We do have some transactions that have been made recently in the last few days since our last show, and it's definitely a good idea to start talking about them. So, and especially considering they're related to some, I don't know, some contenders who may or may not have switched leagues over the past 20 years. So we'll start things off with the Astros. The Astros went out, and our big move for the week is their big move. They went out and acquired former All-Star relief pitcher in Tyler Clifford. They picked up Tyler Clifford from the White Sox. So Tyler Clifford's moved around a little bit this year. He's you could use the word interesting. He's an interesting pickup for an Astros team that's kind of dominating the American League and the American League West. RJ, give me your thoughts. What do you think of Clippy going to the Astros?
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I'll just go ahead and end the show there. Right? You know, it makes sense for them. He's obviously struggled at times this year with the home run ball. At the same time, you know, he's proven in the past that he's a mostly durable arm who can be effective when he's able to avoid the home run ball. I don't know if he's likely to avoid the home run ball going forward. I know he didn't give up one in like 10 innings with the White Sox, but before that he was giving up, you know, the 2 per 9. You know, you slot him in the middle relief, and that's probably about as far as you want to take him at this point in his career. But who knows? Maybe he's found the secret to life or whatever in Chicago, and now he's able to avoid giving up that many home runs, and he can slot in as maybe a 7th inning guy. You don't look at his pitch usage and all, like, there wasn't a huge change from his Astros days to his White Sox days. I mean, I believe he used his fastball a little less and his off-speed stuff a little bit more. Probably not enough to make me say that, yeah, he's fixed, he's going to be great for them. But, you know, it's a fine August addition to a bullpen that, you know, you can always use an extra arm at this point in the season.
Yeah, the thing about the Astros, though, is the arm they could use is probably the other one. They could use a left-handed reliever, especially the way Liriano's been pitching. That doesn't appear to be much of an option. I would think if there was a good quality left-handed relief arm that was out there on the market, the Astros might have gotten them instead of Clifford. I agree with what you're saying about his homer issues this season. And the fact that he limited his home run output in Chicago, of all places, is a little bit weird and kind of strikes me as more of a statistical artifact of small sample size rather than, you know, like, oh, all of a sudden I'm good. Surprise, yeah. Everyone. So, yeah, I think that your take on it being a perfectly fine sixth or seventh inning guy, hopefully not a guy that will have those kind of famous meltdowns like he had for the Yankees at the end of the games, because you know they've got other guys that can throw the end of the games, and Gregerson and Giles and even Chris Stavinsky probably. But yes. Yeah, it's an interesting pickup.
I agree. And you know, the Tampa Bay Rays used to pursue guys, relievers that is, who would give up a lot of home runs, the thinking being that they would normalize their home run rate. And, you know, usually we don't talk about that for relievers. Usually we just talk about it for starting pitchers because of the sample size issues and whatnot. But maybe the Astros believe in that kind of normalization too, even in season. I guess the thing is, this is the second time now they've went out and acquired a reliever. And in both cases, they're taking a risk. You know, with Liriano, they were risking that he's able to make the transition to the bullpen after being a starter for basically his entire career. So far, that hasn't really went well. And now they're risking that Clifford will be able to, you know, keep the ball in the park. So I don't know if either risk is going to pay off for him, but it's interesting that they went this route rather than anteing up for more of a proven reliever. I don't know if that's intentional. I don't know if they're just targeting guys who are coming cheap who they think they can fix up. And, you know, they have the luxury of having Giles, Davinsky, and Gregerson to fall back on or what. But it's an interesting strategy all the same.
Yeah, and I do think that now they're probably pretty limited being in the post waiver deadline period, because you know there are guys like Jerry Blevins who they may have been able to trade for, although reportedly the Mets were asking for the moon for him prior to July 31st, and now you know Blevins, for example, was blocked on waivers, so he can't be dealt. So you've got that kind of restriction now that they're going to have to operate under. I just don't know who they could go out and get who would be substantially better at this point in the season. It's kind of a struggle to find that guy now. They maybe should have gotten somebody else in addition to Liriano in the period before the trade deadline. The question and the criticism of the Astros, I think, that had come up before is that, you know, maybe they were thinking too much about the long term versus the short term. They're in a very good position to get into the playoffs. I mean, they're in a perfect position to get into the playoffs. They probably cannot miss the playoffs, but they may have been looking more long-term instead of short-term, and I don't know if that is going to appear to be short-sighted, especially if they have starting pitchers going five innings in the postseason and their relief corps can't quite hold up.
Yeah, and I'm kind of concerned about this team long-term anyway. I mean, Keuchel is a free agent after 2018, and Correa and Springer have not signed long-term extensions. I know Springer is in town through, I believe, like 2020, and I believe Correa and McCullers are a little bit longer than that. But still, you know, this team has not got the long-term window that I think a lot of people believe they do have. You know, the clock's ticking, and at some point they're either going to have to re-sign some of these guys, or they're going to have to adjust their worldview where the future and the near future mean a little bit more than 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road. So I understand, like, not trading Forrest Whitley or whomever for a reliever or for anyone, but it would be nice to see them show a little bit more urgency in these moves and to go out and get someone who's a little bit more proven, a little bit more comfortable in the roles they're going to ask them to fill.
Yeah, and going back to your comment about maybe the Astros aren't set up for much longer than the next 2 or 3 years, I kind of do wonder if some of that and their inability or I don't know if it's an inability or an unwillingness yet to sign guys like Springer and Correa or Bregman to longer-term deals has anything at all to do with the front office's kind of reputation for not necessarily being very player-friendly. Is one way we can put it. They seem to be a little bit more of one of those distant and cold front offices, at least by reputation, compared to some of the real player-focused or positively looked at front offices. I wonder if that might have anything to do with, you know, the inability or unwillingness yet to sign a guy like Springer to a long-term extension.
Oh, I think it does. I mean, if you go back to not last year, but it was like 2 or 3 years ago, you saw reports that Springer had turned down extension talks. You saw reports more recently, I believe, that Correa had done the same and that he was going to test free agency when that opportunity arose. So whether that's 100% because of the reputation or how they handle people, or if it's just a combination of that and these players wanting to maximize their earning potential, I don't know. But I think it definitely plays some role, and who knows, maybe winning more will change the opinions of those players. But it's concerning if you're an Astros fan because, you know, they supposedly have this great young core, and they're not locking any of them up. And it's not like they're using that payroll flexibility to go out and sign, you know, marquee free agents. I know they absorbed Brian McCann's contract. Mm-hmm. They added Josh Reddick. You know, they've done a couple other moves that required some cash, but, you know, they really didn't have an active winner to the extent that we kind of expected, at least from a free agency perspective, and they haven't really changed that in season. So, I don't know. It's curious to me, and I don't know. Maybe Tyler Clippard will be what cures their ails, but they've been struggling lately, you know? They're like, what, 13-17 over the last 30? And it's not going to matter because, like you said, you know, they have a mile and a half lead in that division, but it's going to be interesting to see what this team does come postseason time. Because if they get eliminated in the DS round, I mean, are we going to be talking about this as the biggest disappointment of the season from a team-level perspective?
Unless the Dodgers get eliminated in the NLDS, yeah, I think so. I would have to think so. I would have to think also this Astros team, you know, given what you're talking about, them having a 2 or 3 year window, which, let's be perfectly honest, that's not a problem. Like, it's okay mm-hmm. that they're this good now and they've got a 2 or 3 year window. I mean, most teams would kill for that. So before we get too negative about the long-term future, we probably want to recognize, like, hey, it's good to be the Astros. I do think that this offseason they need to go out and spend that kind of money. They need to be the high bidder on Yu Darvish or somebody else to shore up the rotation. They need to maybe deal from that prospect depth to get more impact talent because, you know, you have to strike while the iron's hot in these situations.
Yeah, and, you know, a 5-year window begins with a 2 or 3 year window. So it's perfectly fine, perfectly great even to have a 2 to 3 year window. It's just I think maybe – when we think about them, we still view them as being 2 or 3 years removed. I still think we kind of view them as they were 2 or 3 years ago. We view mm-hmm. them as a bunch of babies who are maybe 5 years from their peak, when in reality, it's a lot closer than any of us give it credit for being.
Yeah, I think you're right there. So we will stay on the subject of babies, and we will talk about another team that has a window opening up. Maybe open, probably not closing, and that's the Milwaukee Brewers. They made the other big trade of the last few days, acquiring Neil Walker from the Mets for, we don't know, a player to be named later.
Yeah, I liked him in the Arizona Fall League.
It was great. It was great. Lots of personality, that player to be named later. I don't know if you've seen Josh Fegley's Players Weekend uniform is player to be named later. I thought that was pretty good. So maybe it's Josh Fegley. Who knows?
He's gonna get traded for that one, for a player to be named later, most likely. He's still got some sense of humor, you know, so it's gonna be. But Neil Walker, yeah, I like the deal for the Brewers. You know, they really have not gotten much second base production out of either Jonathan Villar or more recently Eric Sogard since his hot streak came to an end. I don't know if they have enough here to top the Cubs and the Cardinals, because the Cubs and the Cardinals have 2 of the 4 or 5 best records in baseball over the last month plus. However, I do like that the Brewers are still trying, and I've always – well, not always, but I found Walker to be an underrated talent in recent years. Ever since Pittsburgh traded him, you know, I think he gets a bit of a – not a bum rap, but I think people view him as boring, which is perfectly acceptable. It's just I think he's a solid player, you know, usually going to contribute – 2 to 3 wins, and you need players like that. So I really like this addition, and I'm assuming the Brewers didn't give up anything more than, like, a relief prospect, because that's just the Mets' things nowadays. So, yeah, it's a pretty good deal, in my opinion. It gives Milwaukee fans some added hope, and whether it results in a playoff appearance or not, these are the kind of moves you like to see from a surprise team.
Yeah, I think this is a no-lose move for the Brewers. It's really hard to criticize a deal like this when the return appears to be a player to be named later, and by all rumor reports that it is not a player to be named later that anybody's interested in. you know, it's going to be a low A flyer or something like that. Walker's been an interesting guy because he's had these injury issues. He had his back injury last year. He's had his leg injury this year. But despite that, he's hitting just as well as he ever had, really. I mean, last year he hit a little bit better than his norm. But this year he's hitting his usual self, you know, about 260, getting on base frequently, hitting for enough power. He's a switch hitter, which makes him useful in that regard. The thing is, like, the Brewers coming into the season, I really figured, like, second base wouldn't be a problem for them because, like you mentioned, Jonathan Villar had a fantastic season last year, and this year is just completely cratered again. And Eric Sogard, I mean, nobody thought he was going to maintain a 400 on base percentage. He still has a 397 on base percentage, but that's only because he had such a hot streak to the beginning of his Brewers career. It's not because he's actually playing that well now. I just am very surprised by this being a position of need for the Brewers, which is great. They were able to go out and get somebody who is a average to above average regular at a position of need for nothing in August. That's pretty cool to be able to do. And Walker's also been interestingly used already. In his debut for the team, he played third base, which he hasn't really done very much of ever. Giving Travis Shaw a day off, he can play some first base, so they can use him in a couple of different ways if they want to get a little creative. The only bad news there is that Walker's really not a good defensive player. Yeah. So I'm sure that'll be a little bit of a ding on him, but at least they do have that flexibility now.
Yeah. And I mean, the defense was always the knock on him as a player. Mm-hmm. He was always expected to hit a little bit, but it was where would he play on the diamond? And, you know, to his credit, I think he got better at second base as he matured. He's now in his 30s. He, you know, the athleticism that he had is going to slip a little bit. And as you mentioned, he had injury issues, but you know, he's been a solid hitter. Let's just throw this out there. What do you think his career OPS plus is?
I would guess like 115.
113 over – this is his ninth season.
So don't come at me with former Mets statistics and expect me not to get close.
I mean, that was right on the money. That's pretty good. Yeah, pretty good deal for the Brewers. Pretty good little solid player addition, and it feels a need. And you know, maybe they can get back into that Central race even with the Cubs and Cardinals surging like they have.
Yeah, maybe maybe he'll even be the emergency catcher for the Brewers, which would be fun. I've always wanted to see him try to get back behind the plate, and he's got to be better than Andrew Susak has been. So
that one disappointed me because I thought that was a smart little addition to get Susak and throw him back.
I love that trade. I love that trade. I thought for sure that was going to be like their catcher of the future, and I just completely missed on him. So
it seemed like it was going to be A-OK, and it's been the farthest thing from OK.
Very, very true. So, Sean, we're going to bring you in. We're going to talk about the other minor moves that have happened so far in this week that has been. I'm sure you've got a couple more topics for us to go over as we close it out.
I do. And the first one's going to be Brett Anderson signing a minor league deal with the Toronto Blue Jays. The Blue Jays rotation is a bit odd at this point because you have Marcus Stroman, J.A. Happ, Marco Estrada. Chris Rowley had a start and he did well. And then you have Nick Tepish. So do we think that he'll get an inning, or do we think that he'll get a start? Do we think that Brett Anderson is going to prove he deserves to be in the big league roster in the 3-week span he really has left in AAA?
I could see him getting an appearance. I don't know if they intend for him to start or not. I'm kind of all the way out on him at this point. You know, the durability issues make it very tough for me to buy in. And frankly, he's been really bad when he's pitched the last two seasons. I know he had a pretty solid 2015, and that has been like the only year he's stayed healthy in, what, 7 years? So maybe they move him to the bullpen and see if his stuff can play in there, but I'm all the way out on Anderson being a nifty signing or, you know, a potential gem at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm with you 100%. I think the only chance for him is to move into the bullpen, see if his stuff ticks up, see if that can keep him healthy. You kind of wonder about these bullpen moves for a guy with Anderson's issues because, you know, really you've got to consider, can he go 2 days in a row? And if he can't, as a lefty guy, maybe that he's not even really suited for a bullpen conversion. So you got to kind of be open to it. The Blue Jays also have 4 lefties in their bullpen right now, so it's a little bit crowded in there. But like you mentioned, their rotation is kind of a mess right now. I mean, Chris Rowley had a great first start, but I mean, it's not really expecting that that's going to continue for very long, so we'll kind of be open to that. And Aaron Sanchez could come back from his blister issues still. So I'm with you, though. I just don't think it's going to work out for him long term, or even really in the short term. One quick thing about the Blue Jays, and this isn't a little bit roster related, but not really transactionally related. Well, actually, we'll let you talk about other stuff later, Sean, and maybe we'll get back into the Blue Jays. Big cliffhanger for the end of the show.
Stick around. We'll give you more Blue Jays news. I know you are all dying for it. My only other question to you is, who has a better chance of receiving a start this season, Joe Biagini or Brett Anderson?
Probably Biagini, because I don't know that Anderson is a starter, but...
Yeah, I suppose it would be Biagini, too, because also he's on the 40 and Anderson's not. So that would be my guess.
So our next move, we got some big names this time. Bryce Harper, we all saw his injury and how scary that was. And also Nolan Arenado is injured. Do the Nats or the Rockies go out and make a move to cover their superstars?
No.
I could see the Nats making a move to bring somebody in to maybe fill the gap for Harper for a little bit, but really both of these seem like they've happened to teams that don't really need to go out and get somebody to replace them. Like right now, I guess Brian Goodwin's going to step in and be the regular outfielder. It looks like maybe they're going to play a combination of Adam Lind and Howie Kendrick in the outfield, which is
interesting.
Howie Kendrick's been a good left fielder since his transition. It's kind of surprising.
Well, yeah, but Adam Lind is not. Like, the Kendrick side of it is fine. The soft side of the platoon is okay. Adam Lind is terrifying. I really don't think that's going to be a great fit there. And, you know, the list of Nationals outfielders on the disabled list is long. I mean, Rayburn, Worth, Trey Turner, who's sometimes an outfielder, I guess, and then, of course, Eaton and Harper. Like, that's a lot of injured outfielders. It really wouldn't hurt them to go out and be like, hey, we'll take Curtis Granderson and we'll let him play in the outfield for a little bit, or maybe somebody else if they didn't have to give up very much for them.
Yeah, that seems fair, but I don't think it's likely.
It's crazy, right, because everyone they've plugged in has pretty much hit. Like, Brian Goodwin, they put in, he's been playing very well. Michael Taylor has been playing very well. They went out and got Howie Kendrick at the deadline as kind of just a roster filler, or not a roster filler, but kind of like a depth move. And he's been tearing it up since he's came over to the Nationals. So can they do any wrong with going out and getting somebody?
I mean, Andrew Stevenson has not hit, but he's the only guy. And Andrew Stevenson will not be on this team much longer, I assure you, as long as they keep adding some pieces. So, yeah, I'm with you, generally speaking. This scary, and if Harper had a more serious injury, maybe you could have seen them doing something, but you're right. I think they'll just stick it out.
So we talked about Ryan Howard earlier in the year signing a minor league deal with the Atlanta Braves. Now he has signed a minor league deal with the Colorado Rockies. So, Coors.
Oh, I mean, he probably won't make it to Coors. I think this is fun in that, you know, Ryan Howard apparently still wants to keep playing. Which is really cool. I think that's really fun, but I just don't know. I don't think he's got anything left. And, you know, the Rockies do have Matt Reynolds, who's like Ryan Howard, only better. So I just don't think that this is something that they're going to really want to do unless they want to just get some fans to come in September and they give them a call up for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, there's a joke here about the only course he'll be enjoying will come from his fridge. I don't think he has anything left, and maybe, like you said, they bring him up as like a designated pinch hitter come September, but even that seems unlikely. I will say he has a reputation for being a good clubhouse guy, but it's a little late in the year to be doing moves to boost your minor league clubhouse morale. So
yeah, that's probably a pretty good point. All right, I'm going to throw something out here. I just saw some breaking news come across the wire. We were just talking about the Nationals making a move. Would you support or not support them making a trade for reportedly a man who has just cleared waivers in Giancarlo Stanton?
They won't do that.
Of course they won't do that, but I would support it. I think that would be a perfect move for them. You trade Jason Worth, who's probably crossed waivers. You trade Victor Robles. You trade somebody else. And then you got the Harper-Stanton outfield. I mean, why would you not want to see that?
They should trade for very good players, what Brian just said. He would support that. And yes, he would support it if they gave up a dude they don't need and just one of their top prospects. That's all it would take to get.
So how many teams could trade for Stanton if he cleared waivers? I think the Nationals are one of the few that could.
Yeah, it's probably like two or three. Because you know, you have to take on that cash outlay, and you also have to probably give up something, because I don't think Miami will just dump the contract unless something – misreading that situation. So
that's what I mean when you say when I say that you have to. There are only a few teams that can do it, because I think there's only a few teams with the prospect capital to make that move. You'd have to take on a huge contract, and you'd have to give up substantial prospects in return in order to do it, to make that deal. I don't know. Just a fun thing.
I think it's a little bit tangential, but we're going to look back one day and realize that Giancarlo Stanton, Marcelo Ozuna, and Christian Yelich all played in the same outfield. And they never did anything with that. And it's going to be one of like the saddest fun facts, I guess. But that outfield, man, that's always floored me. How you have that core and just nothing.
This reminds me of when the Cubs had the faux French outfield for a couple of games. Like, it was Marquise Grissom and Jock Jones and Juan Pierre. And they didn't do anything with that. I mean, they didn't even give away like honorary French fries or nothing. So.
Oh, wow. I had no idea that happened. That is a...
I think it was only in spring training, honestly. But you know what? It's a nice little tidbit.
That is magical, RJ. I'm so glad you shared that with us.
Thank you. Another kind of triplet of moves. Devin Mesoraco fractured his foot. Brian McCann to the DL with right knee soreness. And Russell Martin to the disabled list with a strained left oblique. So, all catchers, which do you like to actually continue catching after they return from their injury? Who do you think catches more innings in 2018?
Well, it ain't Mesoraco, I'll tell you that. I mean, he's been an absolute mess physically since his breakout season in 2014, so I would put him snugly at the bottom of the list. I guess I'm tempted to go with Brian McCann. Rossi, do you have a Russell Martin defense lined up, or are we just going to agree that it's not?
I think that Martin still has the best ability to recover from his injury issues because of his crazy athleticism. Not to dig on McCann's. I mean, McCann is obviously a heck of an athlete, but Martin always kind of strikes me as the type of guy who's always, since he works so hard on his fitness and his health, despite all of the injuries that he has, I always kind of think he might be the one who comes back and is able to maintain his framing and, you know, continue to play okay. The injuries this year are a little bit worrisome, but I would kind of put my money on Martin just a hair over McCann.
That's fair. I mean, I would note, though, that, you know, McCann, at least reputation-wise, I haven't checked his framing numbers this season, is a good framer. That's the only thing. Like, one of the few things he does well defensively, because, you know, his arm is not really there. And, you know, he's supposedly a solid staff handler as well. I would go with McCann because of that. I have a little bit more confidence in his bat, which, you know, maybe that's a mistake. He is a bigger dude, though, and I guess that's a little concerning. I would maybe ask this, like, how comfortable are you banking on a dude's framing? Because we've seen Yadier Molina and we've seen Jonathan Lucroy really lose their framing value in a hurry, and both of those guys were considered two of the best. And nowadays, I believe LaCroix was like one of the worst in the league last I checked, right before his trade to Colorado. So how much would you – or how secure do you feel, I guess, saying, you know what, McCann and Martin are both going to be good framers for the next 2 to 3 seasons given what we've seen elsewhere?
Well, with Russell Martin, I feel pretty secure about it because there has been such a consistency in his framing numbers. This year is by far his worst framing season on aggregate, but he's still worth 5.5 framing runs above average according to Baseball Prospectus's metrics. He's got 5 framing runs and 5.5 fielding runs above average are right now. So with him, I feel a little bit differently. I assume it's going to decline. I assume he's not going to be as consistent as he's always been, but I would still see him being pretty good on the aggregate. With McCann goes up and down, and that makes me kind of confused about him. He was a bad framer in 2015, and he was a bad framer. Well, he's an average framer this season. He's actually got a negative 0.2 framing runs according to Baseball Prospectus's metrics this year. Does that have something to do with maybe a situation in Houston? I'm not 100% sure, but that's why I would kind of be much less inclined to just assume McCann's going to be a good framer going into next year, whereas Martin, I mean, there's been no history of him being a bad framer anywhere in his background.
That makes sense. But we're agreed it's either McCann or Martin. Mesoraco.
Oh, yeah, Mesoraco's a mess.
If Mesoraco's last name didn't begin with M, would we even have him in this conversation? Because he's not in there. He is.
Well, oof. I mean, he does, to me, have the highest offensive upside at this point of his career of the three guys. It's just that I have no confidence that he'll actually stay on the field.
Here's a question for you. Does he ever play in more than 100 games again in a season? Actually, you know what? Let me put it this way. Because I don't even think he's played in 100 games total the last three seasons. How many games do you see Mesoraco playing in next season period? Not as a catcher, just, you know, as a left fielder, as a first baseman, whatever they're going to – wherever he ends up, how many games do you see him playing in next season?
I would go with like 85 as my number. I really don't think it's going to be that many. And the Reds don't have a lot of other good options. That's the thing going for him is that, you know, he doesn't have a lot of competition. But, yeah, I mean, it's not going to be nearly as many. I would think McCann and Martin both stand a much better chance of playing more games than he does.
I would say the thing he has going for him, though, is that the extension he signed right after the breakout he's going to make. Actually, how much do you think he's going to make? One more question. Like, you know, take a guess. How much do you think he's making next season?
It's probably something like $10 million.
It's $13
million. Wow, that's a lot.
Good for Devin Mesoraco, man.
Yeah,
very good. Sign those extensions because you never know what's going to happen.
And the one thing that I'll just throw out, your Blue Jays fact that I was fascinated by that I wanted to get to now. It's really not that exciting. The Blue Jays now are running a catcher tandem of Rafi Lopez and Michael Ullman, which is, I mean, has any team been more snake bitten by catcher injuries this year than the Blue Jays? They went out and got Luke Mayle. He's injured. They went out and got Miguel Montero. He's injured. They just got nothing, man. They've got nobody in their system. So they're with Martin out, they could afford to lose Russell Martin less than anybody probably at this point.
That makes sense.
So one more for you, and we go back to our friends in the Northwest, the Seattle Mariners. They signed Jenmark Gomez and coaxed Andrew Alvarez to come be a starter for them. And do either of these guys make a difference? Are they a playoff team at this point? How many more starters are they going to have featured in their rotation this year?
Well, I hope neither of these guys make a difference because they're in trouble with Gomez or Albers or difference makers. I would also throw in, though, the Mariners acquired Ernesto Friere for $1, which is probably the best transaction of the season because it's like simultaneously, hey, we really want you in our bullpen, and also we were able to get you for a single dollar despite your history as an effective late-game reliever. So do you think, yeah, I mean, I don't know if Friere would be like insulted or complimented at this point, but yeah, I mean, these are fine depth building moves. Neither is going to make a difference. Maybe Gomez summons some of the magic he had early last season. Probably not, though. They're probably going to be kind of forgotten about by the time September rolls around because they just brought up Vieira, who might lead the league in velocity if he qualifies next season. And that's a very interesting arm. Obviously, he has to work on his control and consistency, but that could be the difference maker of the Mariners' recent additions rather than any of the veteran names we have thrown out there in the last, you know, 2 minutes.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, right now, Gomez and Friere, neither of those guys are on the 40-man roster. The way that the Mariners have had to use so many pitchers, their 40-man roster is pretty busy right now. Now, granted, Jerry DePoto will probably trade away or release six guys and get four more new ones. It's just a matter of him adding and subtracting over and over again. But I'm kind of with you. I think Ryan Garten's got a better chance of showing up in the bullpen than either of these other guys. I just like to bring up that we have to talk about Jeanmar Gomez a little bit because when the season started, he was a closer for a team. Like, he was actually a closer in the year of our Lord 2017. And to me, that's just like kind of mystifying that this is how far you can fall as a relief pitcher so quickly. I mean, he wasn't good when he started the season. It was he had no business being a closer in Philadelphia to begin the season, but it was a thing that happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, though, it was for the Phillies, who were not really expecting to contend. Wasn't there a moment this season where the Phillies were like decent? We were like, oh, look, they're decent. Or was that last year and I'm just combining them? Yeah. Well, that died quick.
You're using the royal we here. I would like to state for the record that I was never excited about the Phillies playing well. Not for a moment.
I was using the royal we. I mean, I wasn't excited about them either. I didn't think they had the let me distance myself from that because where are they now? Like 43-73 and
The one thing I was super excited about for the Phillies this offseason was this is me saying like I'm not a genius. I'm wrong all the time. But the one thing I was excited about for the Phillies this year, I was like, man, that was such a smart move to sign Michael Saunders. Like, that's going to work out so well for him. And then like so many other things went right and wrong and decisions were made. But that Saunders move looks just so horrible in hindsight. I could not have been more wrong about that one. But no, I was never, I did hear people at the beginning of the season talking about, well, now the Phillies are coming and, now they just need to make one or two more moves and all of a sudden they're going to be a wild card contender. This team does not look like that at all. It looks like a team that's still 2 years away from doing anything, and they still need to make, a couple of moves to bring in like really top end talent to surround some of their upcoming guys.
Yeah, they're one or two big moves away from being one or two big moves away
right
at this point. To their credit, though, I mean, Daniel Nava has had a surprisingly effective season in, 200 plate appearances, and Nick Williams has been solid, at least from, a surface-level perspective, and they've given our friend Ty Kelly 86 plate appearances. That's always a plus, and now they have Rhys Hoskins, who's kind of interesting, and, some of their young pitchers are interesting. Obviously, Nola, Eckhoff, and I guess that's about the only two that I really find super interesting at this point.
Well, I mean, I think Vince Velasquez is interesting. I'm not sure
he's interesting.
What he is. Speaking, but he is
speaking, speaking of the shine coming off, remember last season when there were rumors about the Rangers sniffing around him, and everyone was like, oh, they're not going to trade him. Why would they trade him? He looks like a stud. And, wow, that just went south so quickly. I mean, this entire conversation is so depressing. We cannot do a Phillies only episode. I mean, that'd be at that point it might be worse than the Mets episode in terms of tone. I mean, wow.
And the thing that makes me the craziest, I think, about the Phillies and what they're doing right now is the Jorge Alfaro thing. The guy's barely getting any playing time over Cameron Rupp, and Jorge Alfaro is here. You gotta let him get some reps, but I think he's playing every other day or something, and he's played two out of the last five or six with Philly. And I mean, just let that guy eat. I want to see him not actually let him eat. That would be, nobody needs that, but I would like to play a quick game, and I will be your host, and both Sean, you and RJ are going to take turns, and you're going to name pitchers that are currently on the Phillies 25 man roster without looking at a depth chart. Sean, you get to go first. We're going to see how many.
I'm going to nail Aaron Nola. I'm going to get that one out of the way real quick.
All right. There's one.
All right. Eckhoff.
Yep, Eflin. There's two. That's three.
Neris.
That's four.
Jesus Christ.
And game.
Is it Mark Leiter still up, I think?
Mark Leiter is one. All right, we'll give Sean one minute for him to come up with something.
They have that French dude or Canadian dude. I don't remember his name, though. I'm going to be honest with you.
They do have a Canadian dude.
And there's only one ever Phillies pitcher I'd even guess at this point, because it's like Adams Morgan up here. Morgan Adam, whatever his name is. I don't even know what his name is at this point. Isn't Adam, it is. Adam Morgan?
Adam Morgan. So
there we go.
Six between the two of you.
God, there was...
Okay.
And six and a half if you count the French guy or the Canadian.
Who is the – what's his name?
Nick Pavetta.
I've covered two of his starts.
He's the
– Jason Therrien.
Jason Therrien, yep. The other ones who are on the roster right now are Luis Garcia, Edibre Ramos, Ricardo Pinto, and Hobie Milner.
Of course. Everybody knows Hobie.
Yeah.
Of course.
So
that was on the tip of my tongue. That was on the tip of my tongue, Brian. With all due respect.
I would have gotten five, personally, because I would not have gotten Pavetta, but I would have gotten Mark Leiter because, it's the whole Mike Stanton thing where it's like these guys are coming back now with the same names as other former pitchers, and it's messing with me.
Reincarnation is a hell of a thing.
Yeah. Brian, your Jenmar Gomez thing still blows my mind because I'm looking at his stat line. I know saves are bad, but dude had 37 saves last year. Like,
I know.
That.
Yep. That Brody, you just sound like an after school special. You know that, right? I know drugs are bad,
let me sell you on some drugs.
And that's today's episode. I am RJ Anderson, interesting writer of agent articles. You can find my work at CBS Sports. You can find Brody at Beyond the Box Score and BP Mets. And you can find Grosnick shaking his head solemnly behind his computer and also at BP. Thank you for listening, folks.
Have a good episode. Have a good rest of your week. We'll see you guys next time.